Good evening. We would like to welcome you to the Committee on Special Events Public Discussion on Whaling. Alaska is unique in that it is now the only area in the United States where whaling is the essential part of the subsistence of the native members of our population. The IWC, the International Whaling Commission, made the bowhead whale a protected species and has permitted the Alaskan Eskimos a quota this year of 27 struck or 18 landed. The Eskimos say that they will ignore this quota and will take 44 bowheads, or 2% of the whale population. Our discussion tonight will evolve around two very complex problems then. Whaling, as it strongly affects the heritage and subsistence needs of the Eskimos, and the need for protection of what many have observed to be the most intelligent creatures of the sea. Over the past week, we have been given the opportunity to learn more about the whale and whaling. Dr. Robert Whedon's pub lecture, if you heard it on Tuesday afternoon, was highly informative. Many of you have had the opportunity to see films being shown in Wood Center. Some of you also had the opportunity to listen to Dr. Spong and Mr. Adams in lectures in your classes. Tonight, Mr. Adams and Dr. Spong will present further their views on whaling. We have agreed on a format that should allow as many of you as desire an opportunity to present questions to our guests. I believe, yes, we do. I have a cordless mic here, and when that time comes, I'll walk around and allow you to use the mic to ask those questions. However, let me have a couple of minutes to say a couple of things about our guests. Dr. Spong received his PhD in physiological psychology, and he specializes in the area of brain behavior relations. He has served as a member of the faculty of the University of British Columbia and is currently doing research with the Orcinus, is that correct? Orcinus orca, the killer whale, under the nonprofit Pacific Killer Whale Foundation. He has been involved since 1972 in Save the Whale movements, working especially with Greenpeace. He presently represents Greenpeace as an observer at the International Whaling Commission Scientific Committee. Mr. Jake Adams is an Eskimo from Alaska and sits as a chairperson of the Alaskan Eskimo Whaling Commission. I believe his thoughts best represent the man. He states, "Those who don't live with my people can ask them to go hungry, but I cannot." He also states, "Our position is just and reasonable. Maintaining our way of life will not destroy the whale. We want to continue to live in harmony with our environment." In discussion earlier, I guess we decided that you would go first, Mr. Adams. And I'll present Mr. Adams.
Thank you. Well, I'd like to thank the Special Events Committee for allowing the Eskimos to give their views about whaling. I'd like to give a little background of what the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission is. The Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission is an organization of all of the subsistence whaling captains in Alaska. There are 9 villages in Alaska which spin on the bowhead, all the way from St. Lawrence Island to Koktovik near the Canadian border. The commission as a governing body of 9, with each village represented in this governing body. The Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission was created in September of 1977. For the first time in the recorded history, Alaska Eskimo whaling captains came together from 9 remote whaling villages to discuss ways and means in which the Eskimo community might respond to the International Whaling Commission's ban on subsistence hunting of the bowhead whale. Some of the reasons why the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission was created. Because for centuries, the Eskimos have hunted the bowhead in a controlled and intelligent fashion. Hunters who have shown disrespect to the bowhead whale by harvesting it in a inefficient way have been ostracized from the community. Nevertheless, we realize that even the most ingrained traditions need to be emphasized and reinforced, particularly when outside forces are promoting a social change in the Eskimo society. The whaling captains also realized that some people were disseminating information concerning the manner in which most Eskimos were hunting and using the bowhead. This information we felt were very misleading. The whalers believed it was essential to communicate to the outside world the facts concerning Eskimo whaling. Finally, the whalers also recognize that their intuitive knowledge of the bowhead should be communicated to the outside world. We realize that the present body of information concerning the bowhead was inadequate and even misleading. So we decided that there's a need for extensive scientific information of the bowhead whale to ensure the continued existence of the bowhead whale and the Eskimo culture. Given these needs, the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission was created with a threefold purpose. One, to ensure that the bowhead whale hunting was conducted in a traditional and non-wasteful manner. Secondly, to communicate to the outside world the facts concerning bowhead whale hunting, the way it was done, the centrality of the hunt to the culture and the nutritional needs of the Eskimo. The Eskimo's knowledge of the whale and the reason why a moratorium on such hunting would have disastrous impact on the Eskimo community, and to promote extensive scientific research on the bowhead so as to ensure the continued existence with unnecessary disruption to the Eskimo society. Some of the things that the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission have done is that the AEWC serves as an organized forum through which Eskimos can inform people in remote villages and in the outside world. Operating with funds first from the North Slope Borough and last year from the state of Alaska. We have performed these primary functions in education, regulation, and research about the bowhead and the Eskimo. The Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission has engaged in numerous educational efforts. It has encouraged the production of a film portraying Alaska Eskimo whaling of the bowhead. It has answered inquiries and responded to allegations from outsiders unfamiliar with Alaska Eskimo whale hunting. Representatives of the AEWC have testified in Washington and in Alaska concerning the cultural and nutritional importance of the bowhead whale for Alaska Eskimos. In addition, representatives of our commission have visited state and federal officials to tell our story and urge that the IWC action, establishing arbitrary quotas on number of bowheads which we can harvest, be overturned, and that an appropriate management plan be implemented which does not pose a risk to either the Eskimos or the bowhead whale. During the spring 1978 hunt, the commission members talked to conservationists and to reporters who had come to Alaska to view subsistence whaling at first hand. Many who came with negative attitudes went away convinced that the Eskimo hunt of the bowhead wasn't all that bad. Secondly, the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission has been working and instituting regulations for our own whale hunters. We also fought to have the United States object to the initial IWC moratorium and present an alternative domestic regulatory program at the December 1977 meeting of the IWC. While this was rejected, the AEWC was successful in obtaining from the United States government a commitment to restore the subsistence hunt. Having received assurances from our own government, we agreed to participate in further IWC meetings. Meetings were attended in Tokyo and London. The Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission adopted regulation that ensures traditional Eskimo hunting methods be followed and that a number of whales tempted but not harvested will be substantially reduced. During the spring 1978 hunt, the AWC management plan has been honored by all Eskimo whalers. When a misunderstanding arose concerning the kind of whales that could be taken under the IWC, we called an emergency meeting, which was attended by our own U.S. Commissioner to the IWC. The AEWC was instrumental in resolving the misunderstanding and urged the whalers not to take the Ingalls, even though the IWC language might not prohibit whaling for the Ingalls. For this year, the Alaska Eskimo whaling captains and whalers are committed to compliance with the AEWC directives so that we can enhance the nutritional and cultural needs of the Eskimos. The basis of our regulations this year is the position that the Eskimos and the United States presented to the IWC in June of 1978. It is a taking of up to 2% of the known population of the bowhead. I think many of you read in the papers that the Eskimos are going to take 44 whales. That may be or may not be the case. The hunting of the bowhead is quite often controlled by the ice and weather conditions. We actually never know how many bowheads we're going to take. We take it as it comes along. If the ice and the weather conditions are such that they cannot allow the hunting of the bowhead, it means sometimes that even one whale may not be taken by some of the villages because of these conditions. So we feel that the position that we've taken is just and fair. It's like the most important thing that we are currently working on is the research of the bowhead whale. What the whale is and how many whales they are. There's very little information known about the bowhead. In fact, the only time that any extensive research project taken by anybody was last year, 1978, when the U.S. government and the Eskimos cooperated to work on a research program which would hopefully continue so that we can find some answers to these unanswered questions. We have been working with the U.S. government on this research program. Just to tell you, the Eskimos are much more familiar with ice conditions and the behavioral patterns of the bowhead whale than most scientists are. To some extent, the government scientists has been receptive to many of the suggestions that we have made and have utilized the Eskimo whalers' assistance in conducting the research program. We have been urging that a joint research program or programs be undertaken with the Soviet Union and Canada in hopes of establishing better information about the size of the bowhead population and environmental risk of the species. In response to criticisms concerning the number of whales attempted to be harvested but not harvested, the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission has met with the manufacturer of the weapons we currently use and have made suggestions to improve the reliability and the effectiveness of these weapons. We also employed a ballistics expert to develop a more effective bomb. This has been achieved, and the bomb that's been developed during the past year will be utilized to some extent this spring. But some of the problems we have is that our cooperative and positive efforts of the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission has been difficult. At many points, the efforts have been thwarted. First, the United States government failed to object to the total moratorium, and at the same meeting, failed to allow the harvest of enough whales to even meet the minimum nutritional requirements of the Eskimos. At every juncture, we said there are many more whales, and still our words have been ignored. Nevertheless, these efforts have paid off in terms of management of the hunt, better population estimates, and convincing the United States government of a need to treat Aboriginal whaling differently from commercial whaling. The population estimate is now about 2,300 whales. This was derived from those whales that went by barrel during the period of April 15 to about June 6, 1978, and does not include the bowhead that migrate up the Siberian coast, and those not migrating, and those that migrated after June 6. In June of 1978, the United States government and the Eskimos went to London with strong hopes of finding a peaceful and equitable solution to the subsistence whaling issue. We had in hand better scientific information, although it was not complete, documentation of subsistence and cultural needs, and most importantly, a plan for treatment of Aboriginal whaling. However, the International Whaling Commission did not consider the proposal that the United States government and the Eskimos put together. And neither did the International Whaling Commission allow the Eskimos to speak on their own behalf. Instead, the Eskimos were used as a pawn in a game that the IWC developed in 1975. It is known as the New Management Procedure. In simplest terms, this procedure is nothing more than trading votes, playing politics. It felt that the IWC treated science as irrelevant and as a political tool. It is unfortunate that the International Whaling Commission chose to treat the Eskimos unfairly because time for Eskimo sacrifice passed. The community upheaval that resulted in the unfair quota in 1978 will not occur again. The Eskimos do not want to hinder the work of the IWC, but we cannot allow ourselves to be destroyed so that the IWC can be preserved. All we ask for is rationality and fairness to prevail. The Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission has already decided that we are going to conduct our subsistence whaling under our own management plan and continue to engage in research on the bowhead whale. See, the goal of the Eskimo leaders is to use their resources to provide a safe and a healthy environment for our people without abandoning a subsistence way of life. In the struggle for Alaska Eskimo self-determination, the bowhead whale plays a very critical role. The hunt is a subsistence activity which has important cultural and nutritional significance for the Eskimos. It is the only activity which reinforces the sense of community, the cooperation and sharing, which is integral to the Eskimo community's survival in the face of the rapidly changing world of ours. Thank you.
I'd like to first say that it's a great pleasure to be here. I've never made a trip to Alaska before, and it's nice to be here at the thaw. I don't see any flowers yet, but it feels like springtime. I'd like to say thanks to Doug for chairing this meeting, and thanks to Ron Inouye and the members of the Special Events Committee for bringing us together. I've enjoyed spending the last day with Jay. I've learned things about whales from him, which I'm really appreciating. What my particular role at the moment is to share with you a little bit of my understanding of whales in the hopes that that might lead to an understanding of the Greenpeace perspective on whales. For the Greenpeace attitude about whales and whaling is really derived from a perception of whales, which is perhaps a little bit different from that of the past. May I have the first slide, please? and the house lights.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The first thing that we recognize about the whales is that, like us, they're mammals. They breathe air, they bear their young alive, they suckle their young, and so forth. Perhaps the most obviously impressive thing about them is the size that some of them grow to. The blue whale, for example, is the largest creature ever to have evolved on the planet. It grows to a length of 100 feet or more and may weigh 150 tons. Which is to say equivalent to the combined weight of 2,400 women. Whales not only have large bodies, they have immense brains. The largest brain on the planet is possessed by the sperm whale. Is that in focus, that slide? No. Could you just twist the... Well, it's okay, forget it. It may come into focus on the next one. Sperm whale's brain weighs about 19 pounds. It's in the center here, in comparison with the human brain weight of about 3.5 pounds. Here are some drawings of representative brains as you go up the mammalian scale. You can see that there's an obvious increase in size as you go up this scale from the marmoset monkey through the dog, the orangutan, the human, and the dolphin. The dolphin has the largest of these brains. It's about 1.25 times the size of the human brain. But notice something else here. The surface of the brains are crisscrossed by black lines. The black lines represent the infolding which occurs in the cerebral hemispheres, the outer layers of the brain, the most recently developed parts of the brain, the parts of the brain that represent the highest levels of function. Notice that there are
over several lifetimes of information handed down from generation to generation, but in the intimate knowledge that we have about the bowhead. Maybe it's because the Eskimos don't have a PhD in science that they don't accept the knowledge that we have. And this is a rather sad case in history. That our own Western society is turning their back on a group of people who knows most about the bowhead. However, we're still continuing to work and prod and try to get the scientific community to accept the knowledge we have about the bowhead. I'm very hopeful that we can achieve this goal that we are working on. Most probably it will result in much, much better understanding of the bowhead and a much more efficient method of doing research on the bowhead whale. One of the unfortunate things happening this year is that our own government decided to cut their research program by over 50%. The level of the research program been greatly reduced compared to last year's research efforts. We are very bothered by these type of actions taken by our own government, when in fact they had made a commitment to the International Whaling Commission that they would continue to work towards finding some answers to the questions that the scientific committee had about the bowhead.
Dr. Spahn, besides the obvious emotional appeal, why do you consider the whale response to the synthesizer significant? Other animals and birds often respond to man-made signals and sounds, and I'm not sure that, such a communication truly suggests genuine communication or exceptional intelligence.
Yes, it's a valid comment. In the year following that, Eric Hoyt, the musician who did that work, had a little better synthesizer, which he could imitate the sounds a little more precisely, and he had a number of situations develop in which he was engaged in an exchange of an extended sequence of sounds between himself and a whale. And he had up to 14 exchanges, backwards and forwards. The interesting thing about them was that he would imitate a whale's sound, and the whale would imitate his sound but change it somewhat, maybe shift it up a harmonic. And then he would imitate that, and the whale would come back and imitate that again, but change it in a systematic way, so that after a few exchanges, they were in fact using quite different sounds, but each related to the other in a systematic way. And with 14 of these phrases, backwards and forwards, working systematically, it seems to be quite an encouragement in terms of developing a process whereby there is an acoustic interaction between people and whale. We're, in our research program, associated with a group who are involved in developing computer techniques for this, and we hope this summer to test a computer toy for a whale, in which we will pick an individual whale and use its signature as a way of triggering a sequence of related signals from a computer. And we're wondering whether the whale might be interested in playing a game with a machine which will treat what it does in a totally systematic way. And we believe that this is an approach to developing an exchange between whales and people. The other thing that we're trying to do at this point is develop some sense of what the significance of the sounds of the whale represents by running behavior sound correlation studies, in which we're trying not just to observe the behavior of the whales above water, but observe the behavior of the whales underwater, and using a side-scanning sonar system in conjunction with a multi-channel hydrophone array so that we can pinpoint the location of a sound in the whale that makes the sound, and then look at its behavior in relation to it. And for example, in a cooperative hunting situation, it may be possible to describe the actual behavioral significance of some of the sounds. If we can begin to tie down meaning to some of the sounds, and as well develop this exchange between whale and people, maybe we will start and get somewhere in terms of developing a mutual language between the two species. I think this is maybe some years down the road, but there are other experiments in the works, particularly with dolphins, in which techniques developed on primates such as the chimpanzee, in which they've been taught a human language, like American Sign Language, for example, and chimpanzees shown to be able to communicate quite complex ideas to a machine and to people. These kinds of experiments with the chimpanzee are now being tried a little bit differently with dolphins in a couple of different places. And there are preliminary indications that they're going to be successful. And by these means, we may one day, within a few years, be in fact holding an intelligible conversation with the dolphin. And we, in the ocean, maybe, we'll be holding an intelligible conversation with an orca. I don't know exactly how long this is going to take, but I have a feeling that within, say, a decade, there are going to be some quite remarkable progress made in this area. And one of the interesting things about that is that once you can unquestionably demonstrate an aspect of intelligence, like language, in a creature, then I think people's ideas about whales are going to start and shift even more rapidly than they are at the present time. That's why I have the confidence, ultimately, that the whole problem that the whales are facing is going to be dealt with by the acquisition of new knowledge. And, for example, in the bowhead situation, even if the hunt were to continue for some period of time, and I'm pretty sure it will go on. I really don't see me telling Jake and his people, stop. I can't see telling my kid to stop watching television. So I can't see myself telling Jake to stop killing whales particularly. I can say I'd love him to stop. I'd love him to think of other ways of dealing with the situation because of my attitudes about whales. But I really can't see him believing me particularly or wanting to do what I might want. But I do have the faith that the future will change things. I do have the faith that we're going to learn enough about whales so that we're all going to stop killing them one of these days and just go on being friends with them. Did I answer your question?
Dr. Spahn? Yes. This moratorium that you propose, would it be imposed upon the Japanese and the Russian fishing fleets as well as on the Eskimo fishing fleets? And if so, how would it be imposed and enforced?
Well, listen, don't take my moratorium idea that seriously. What I'm faced with a problem is I float ideas around, you know? And if you float enough ideas around, maybe you'll come up with a really good one for dealing with the situation. We were sitting in a press conference at lunchtime today, and that beluga idea floated through my head, so I floated it by you. But don't, if that's not the right solution, don't do it, you know? You see, I have a perspective that the bowhead is going to survive. I can't believe such an exquisite creature is going to die out. I really can't believe that. So I think we're going to figure it out. I'm sorry, I can't tell you what to do. But I can tell the Russians and Japanese what to do. Stop right now. That's for those guys, you know. It's unquestioned that there is no reason whatsoever for Russia or Japan to be killing whales. Although, mind you, I might make a very good argument on behalf of the Japanese people that they should be allowed to go on killing whales. In 1974, the Japanese whaling industry produced 124,000 tons of whale meat. And that was consumed in Japan. And it's a very important part of the food supply of a certain element of Japanese people, and they're the poor people. It's the poor people in Japan who suffer when the whaling industry goes. In the 5 years that's gone by since 1974, that meat production from whales has halved, and the price has gone up. When whaling stops, less than 0.5% of the protein supply of the Japanese people is going to be cut off. That means for the Japanese people as a whole, whale meat is a minuscule proportion of their diet. But for some poor people in Kyushu, particularly, the southern islands in Japan, whale meat is a really important source of food. And those people are going to suffer when whaling stops. But you see, I gotta put the whale before the people. I gotta do that. And I gotta say to the Japanese, stop right now. I find it a little more difficult to say that to the Eskimo people, but I believe ultimately things are gonna change up there too, probably. Hope so.
I have a question for Mr. Adams. take it?
I was wondering how the U.S. government was going to deal with your overtaking of the 18 and taking of your own quota of the 2% or 45. How they were going to react, the U.S. government authorities were going to react to that, and how they were going to work with you on it.
Sorry, I didn't quite get all of that. It's difficult for...
me to understand the question. Can you repeat that again? Or
the question was, how is the U.S. government going to react to the Eskimos going over the quota set by the IWC?
We have not heard from the government as to what their plans are for their enforcement program. However, I did talk with Richard Frank, who's the U.S. Commissioner to the IWC, about a month ago. Show me if the Eskimos are going to be reasonable, then they won't be reasonable. Suppose that it'd be subject to interpretation by what reasonable means. So we really don't have any idea of the type of enforcement program, or we have not received any reactions to what the commission decided about a month ago.
Mr. Adams, if this year's census of the bowhead or a subsequent year showed a decline, and it reached what your commission considered a minimum sustainable yield, can you foresee any time when the AEWC would declare a moratorium on subsistence whaling?
I'm sorry, I'm having a difficult time understanding some of these questions.
If this year's census showed a decline and subsequent years showed a continued decline in the bowhead population, and certain members of your community felt you were approaching a minimum sustainable yield where the population was in danger, can you foresee the AEWC imposing its own moratorium on subsistence whaling at any time?
What the commission decided on was based on the current population of the bowhead whale. Which we're looking at 2% of up to 2% of the known population estimates. And since if the results of the research show that the population of the bowheads is declining because we're taking too many, at that point, the Eskimos will have to make another safe. Likely won't be that we don't want to put ourselves in a position to cause the extinction of the bowhead whale. One of the things that we've always been trying to get across, especially the knowledge and the information that we've gotten from our experienced older whalers who've been whaling for the last 50, 60 years. They've always been telling us that
during their lifetime of whaling, have seen an increase in the number of whales passing the whaling villages. But fortunately, this type of knowledge has not been accepted.
I have two questions. The first one, how many countries hunt the bull whale commercially?
Let's say about 30% of the people living in all of the whaling villages actually go out whaling.
No, the question is, are there any countries now that are hunting the bullhead whale commercially, like not for subsistence?
Pardon? No, I think as far as we know, the Eskimos in Alaska are the only group of people who hunt the bowheads. I think, and my experience of attending the International Whaling Commission meetings, it seems to be the implication that only the Eskimos are the ones that are hunting the bowhead. The IWC doesn't know whether some of their own members are taking the bowhead. For instance, maybe the Russians or the Japanese. Even though they're a part of the International Whaling Commission, quite often, even the commission doesn't know what the members of the commission are doing.
My second question is, has there been a study, or will there be a study, as to how the bowhead whales react to the sonar exploration being conducted by the oil companies on the coastline for mapping?
There's one of the things that we are working on and participating in a research program called Project Whales. It's undertaken by the Naval Arctic Research Laboratory in Barrow. The purpose of that project is to try to come up with some answers as to what the results or what the effects might be if there were to be exploration offshore. But one of the problems that we're running across is the very own laws of the United States, which were enacted to protect the bowhead, is hindering the protection of the bowhead. You just cannot allow the bowheads to be harassed in any way. Some of the things that we've been trying to look at is what the noise, or what type of noise will affect the bowheads.
well, the noise of the drill rigs affect the bullets in such a manner it will offset the normal migratory route. There's no real way to come up with answers unless we work with the effects of noise directly to the bullet, but under the Endangered Species Act, it cannot be done. There's no way that we can find out what the effects of the expiration will be. We may be able to come up with some assumptions, but most often the assumptions are not the true answers to these questions.
Two more questions.
Can I talk through it? I just better make myself understood now, Mr. Adams. What time of the year is the Arcadero people short of food? Was it midwinter? I guess they're short of food during the midwinter, when the whale meat and other food is eaten up.
One of the effects of the quota last year has been one of food shortage. And some of our villages. And nevertheless, the villagers have gone through hard times. For instance, Barrow, you got only 4 whales. Normally, they may catch anywhere from 15 to 20, which would carry them through the whole year. But there's no more whale meat left in Barrow. And the other problem is the restriction on the caribou which has been imposed about 3 years ago.
Mr. Adams, that I'm from Seward Peninsula. There we have many abundant basic food material, natural food for us. But when I was teaching at North Slope near Barrow, they caught a silver salmon, just one little silver salmon. And the people there at Mead River gave it to the dogs because they didn't have any red salmon up there. And I noticed a lot of differences the way we are provided at Seward Peninsula and up there. And during the winter time, we only get twilight. The airplanes have a hard time to get to Mead River, 90 miles away sometimes. Just at twilight in January, February. Well, in Seward Peninsula, we get all kinds of small animals to eat, fresh. And so I feel the differences there are never explained to the public why Barrow people have to have food. And they must have sea law because we have very low temperatures up there. Now we don't need it down in Seward Peninsula, but the people up there, they need sea law. I was telling a man today, The reason I'm cold is because I try to live like a white man all the time. No sea oil in my content. I mean, in my stomach to keep me warm. Well, we don't understand these things. You don't understand how people up there in the cold country must have food. Without food, you freeze to death. When I was at Kotzebue, someone invited me to whale dinner, whale muktuk dinner, because I wasn't used to eating whale muktuk dinner. Next day, I couldn't open my mouth because I chewed so hard. And doctor said, "What kind of an Eskimo are you?" I said, "I'm from Seward Peninsula." Well, I guess maybe the supervisor has to. Can I quit talking? People do know I want to know Mr. Adams because I'm an Eskimo myself and I've been at Barrow. There's many other things that we don't know anything about. So when we have meetings, we ask questions about the way you live up there. I know I would want to have little sea loa and native food. And I know that if I were a man, I couldn't go very far to kill little animals to eat. Well, thank you for listening. I'm sorry I'm taking too much time.
Dr. Spong, since you started off this discussion by saying that you've never visited an Eskimo village and that you've never been to Alaska before, do you have any plans? And then you ended by saying that you'd extend your hand in friendship to the Eskimo people. Do you have any plans on spending more time in the north and perhaps maybe observing some of the hunts and talking to some of the hunters?
I'd certainly welcome the opportunity to spend more time in the north. I certainly would, and I hope to. I do not have any specific plans at this moment. That some suggestion has been made which I'll explore. And I hope it will come about, because I'm quite serious. I really do believe that by working together we can solve this problem. I believe, for example, that I might contribute ideas to the research program that the people are designing. Perhaps ideas in terms of finding out more about the acoustics of the creature, the behavior of the creature. I think there may be a number of different ways in which I can contribute. Maybe it will be as small a contribution as finding someone who would want to go out with me or with a man like Paul Horn or Paul Winter and play a flute to a bowhead and have the experience of a bowhead floating silently, listening beside the kayak, and then going home and shouting the news and creating a stir of excitement which will maybe start something new. Yeah, I can see helping, participating, learning. I've learned in these 2 days. I haven't changed my mind about whales, but I've learned, and I still have faith in the future, and I appreciate being able to come to Alaska and go away with that faith intact.
We thank you for your questions. Dr. Spong and Mr. Adams, I'm sure, will be available for a few minutes after this discussion to answer some questions that you did not have an opportunity to ask. Thank you very much, Mr. Adams, Dr. Spong.